always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along. Hope that your summer's going well. Ted Ross controls vacation season.
Yes.
I'm thinking that our topic today would be great because maybe the boss is gone, and so we can be free to talk among ourselves, as it were.
When the boss is away, the employees play. Is that the deal?
Well, today we're going to talk about rising above a toxic workplace, taking care of yourself in an unhealthy environment. And it may be that you're on vacation this week, and the idea of going back to work next week is just is something kind of weighing heavy on you. We want to address the issue today and have a great guest who's written a wonderful book. He's one of the co-authors of this resource that we've got some copies of, by the way, and I know this is going to be something you want to read, and you'll find some very practical help in it. And so we'll open up the phone lines right away, as we do when we have resources like this. We make them available. We do a drawing at the end of the hour. And so simply just give us a call and get your name in the drawing. Carissa will take your information down, and we'll put your name in for the drawing. And if you're not maybe in a toxic workplace, maybe you know somebody who is, and you'd find some great help here. As we talk today to one of the co-authors of this book, Dr. Paul White, who's a licensed psychologist. He's worked with individuals, businesses, and families in a variety of settings for 20-plus years. He has a degree in counseling, and he consults with successful businesses and high-net-worth families dealing with relational issues intertwined with business and financial wealth. And in addition to serving businesses, families, and organizations across the U.S., Dr. White has also spoken and consulted in Europe, Central Asia, the Caribbean, South America, and he's got great information for us today as we talk about rising above a toxic workplace. And, today's organizations have moments where they're not healthy. And maybe yours is one in particular. We want to give some practical help today and some biblical encouragement. Dr. White, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. I'm glad to be here.
Now, we're kind of joking about maybe the boss is away this week, but it's probably not always the boss that is the source of the toxicity, but maybe it is.
Well, it can be, but, one of the interesting things that we found, we actually, Dr. Chapman and I wrote The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, where he applied the five love languages to work-based relationships. And as I have been going out and speaking and training work groups and managers, often I would have people come and at breaks or afterwards and say, man, you would not believe how nasty my workplace is or what a jerk my boss is. And to be honest, it was sort of overwhelming initially, just sort of this negative wave that kept hitting. And so we decided to look into it. And so we sent out a questionnaire to the people that are on our newsletter and asked people to tell us stories about, negative work experiences. And this got flooded, and we wound up, interviewing, and that's where the book came from. And, one of the themes is that, a toxic workplace typically has one or more toxic leader. But it's interesting, it's not always the leader at the top. Sometimes we think, it's got to be the, the president or the director or whatever. But lots of times those people are pretty healthy, but there may be somebody, down in middle management or even a frontline supervisor who's really not very healthy that creates problems in the organization.
The stories in the book are true, right?
Yes, I mean,
they're pretty sobering, actually. Some of them is like, wow.
Yeah.
There's some people that are going through some tough stuff.
Yeah, it was sobering, and unfortunately, being forthright, that the worst stories actually came out of people that worked either in Christian organizations or churches, because we had a broad range of manufacturing and secular workplaces. But the really damaging ones were, unfortunately, for people that worked in a Christian setting.
Well, we'll dive into that in a moment, but maybe some definitions at first. And by the way, if you have a question about dealing with an unhealthy environment at work, join us at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Or if you'd like to send us a note, you can do that online, myfaithradio.com. then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there. You can just send us your question, your comment. And if you want to be anonymous, you're welcome to do that, but we'd love to just to have you join the conversation. So let's talk about maybe definitions. What makes a workplace toxic as opposed to maybe difficult or unhealthy?
Well, that is a key question that most of us don't know. You know, is this sort of normally stressful? Is it unhealthy? Is it toxic? Is it deadly? And so actually, after we created the book and some other resources, we developed an assessment tool called the Ratings of Toxic Symptoms scale to give people feedback on that. And it assesses different areas like, you know, poor communication, sense of manipulation, negative environment, a lack of honesty and integrity in others, and so that both we identify sort of the top three problem areas for a person, give them a sense of, you know, is this sort of normal or really, really bad, and then give them suggestions. And so that's all this stuff is available through our website, Appreciation at Work, and it's the word at, but appreciationatwork.com. And I think, bottom line, if you use the image of a toxic physical environment, you know, that's maybe got, you know, goop on the ground and, you know, radioactive stuff in the corner and poisonous gas. You know, there's a difference between you go in and you sort of, you choke and you cough a little bit and it's tough versus you just feel like you're going to die, you know. And part of the difference between the level of toxicity is it's the impact on our health and how it affects us physically, our sleep, exercise, our relationships. And as we see ourselves sort of deteriorating, I think we need to take a look at that and say, man, this may be not a very healthy place for me.
Well, because, you know, there's lots of discussion these days about, you know, working with purpose and all those things. I mean, are our expectations for the workplace unrealistic? I mean, you know, it seems like every job's going to have aspects that are unpleasant.
Sure.
Or is this kind of a generational thing? You
know? Well, yeah, boy, it's sort of a yes and but kind of question in that I do believe culturally we have unrealistic expectations. I mean, you know, we know as followers of Christ and from, you know, biblical worldview that, you know, work was here before the fall, and so it's part of who we are, and God works, and so it's part of our image that way. But after the fall, it became more difficult, and it's going to be a struggle, and it is. And if we don't understand and accept that, I think we can, you know, get frustrated because we think it should be enjoyable or fulfilling and all that. And, you know, I remind people that, you know, to enjoy your work is a gift from God. And, you know, clearly Ecclesiastes repeatedly says that. And so I think it's something we should pray for ourselves as well as our kids and family members is, you know, just give the gift of being able to enjoy your work. But I think in a humanistic society, we, you know, it's if that's all there is, you gotta love life and enjoy it. And so they try to do that. And there is a sense of, can be a sense of fulfillment, but not always, for sure. And I think some people clearly have unrealistic expectations that aren't going to be met no matter where they are, and so they're going to be frustrated and also probably continue to look for different places in a pretty quick fashion.
And, you know, I mentioned just generational. Maybe it's just in the approach of how we handle, you know, an unhealthy workplace or environment. Does the age of the worker make a difference in how we respond, maybe, Ty?
Well, maybe. I think I do some consulting for different organizations and was asked about work ethic issues and generationally and all that. And I think if anybody's to blame, it's my generation. I'm 57. I'm a boomer. And I think culturally and even to now, we've approached parenting of, you know, helping people or want our kids to have a happy childhood. And then when they get adolescence, we're saying, okay, you need to step up and take responsibility. Well, the first part of their life, they expect life to be fun and stimulating. Well, it's not all the time. And I think we've sort of created that expectation among younger generations. And it's not realistic. It's not based in reality. And so then they get frustrated when they think, you know, work, life should be fun, easy, so forth. And it's tougher to hang in there if they haven't sort of had to work and experience working through challenges before.
The book, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, is our conversation focus today. Taking care of yourself in an unhealthy environment. We're going to get some very practical tips about how to respond to some challenges. Also, maybe when is it time to go to do something else? And what if you're maybe the cause of some of the toxicity? We'll get some straight talk today from Dr. Paul White. He is one of the co-authors of his book, written with Dr. Gary Chapman and Harold Myra, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Again, we do have copies to give away, and we'd love to get them in your hands. So give us a call. Sign up for the drawing for that, 877-93-FAITH. And we've got five, six copies or so, so a lot of opportunity for you to receive this and add it to your library and pass it on to a friend or two. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number, and you can join us with the conversation as well as we talk more with Dr. Paul White. He's a licensed psychologist and author, and he's a consultant and a teacher joining us today as we talk about toxic workplace. It's more ahead just on Connecting Faith. Christ, we want our life to let the light of Christ shine in and through us, not only at home and church, but at work as well. But that doesn't mean that the work environment is always the best, and we're learning how to navigate our way through difficult, challenging, and even unhealthy environments today. Rising Above a Toxic Workplace is the title of the book we're referencing, with Dr. Paul White, psychologist, author, and speaker who makes work relationships work. And he's consulted with a wide variety of organizations, including Microsoft and the Air Force and Princeton University, many more. He and Dr. Gary Chapman have co-authored the five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, and we're going to get to talking about appreciation in a moment. But, Paul, you said kind of at the outset that, you know, the stories in the book, which there are many, and, boy, just about every possible situation. But sadly, a good number come out of Christian ministries, kind of church organizations, Christian nonprofits, faith-based organizations. Say a word about that. I mean, I think we maybe assume that, well, if it's a Christian organization, it's going to be a better place to work and there won't be toxicity.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. To be honest, I don't know exactly why it seems to be worse in many Christian settings, but I think there's some dynamics. One is that, you know, as Christians, often we're sort of acculturated to be nice and kind, and we don't always tell the truth about either what's going on, and we sort of, you know, smooth over things, or we try to sort of indirectly communicate something, hint at it, and then it doesn't work. And When I work with Christian groups or Christians in, you know, any work setting, I just say, you know, in Ephesians we're committed, you know, commanded and encouraged to speak the truth in love, and I think we need to keep that in mind, because we need to tell the truth. If something's not going right, or if, you know, we need to give feedback, we need to tell the truth so that there can be corrective action taken. But we need to do it in love. I've lived both in the Upper Midwest. I lived in Chicago for a while, and I do work in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I've lived in Atlanta. And I think culturally we differ a little bit. In the South, Christians often are, they speak in love, but not necessarily the truth. You know, they're pretty indirect, and they don't necessarily tell you what's up. And then you hear about it later from somebody else. And in the Upper Midwest and the Northeast, sometimes people speak the truth, but not necessarily in love. They sort of beat you up with, you know, bluntness of, you know, you really need to get your act together, and if you don't, you know, you're out of here. And I think there's a balance, obviously. And one of the themes that we find that if you're in a negative environment, one of the things to strive to is to work on communicating directly with the people that need the message, instead of going around or gossiping or just not even saying something, but direct communication versus indirect communication, and doing it in a way that's honest versus withholding information or distorting information. You know how some people will sort of tell you part of the story, but not the whole story. And then maybe what actions you think could help. And I think that's important, is not just to sort of complain about something, but maybe give suggestions about what could make things better.
Are there maybe general steps to that process? So if we're going to communicate directly, you know, maybe it's a coworker, perhaps maybe more likely it's a, you know, manager or boss or something, and we say, well, I have a problem with this, or, I mean, we obviously...
Yeah, there's some nice guiding principles. One is always to try to make an I statement. It's like, I'm concerned about this, or I'm observing this, or I'm feeling uncomfortable about. So it starts with me, because that's, you know, it's just your perceptions. And then describe a behavior or an action versus going to conclusions. You know, I'm concerned that I see that Susan frequently seems to come in late, 15, 20 minutes, three or four times a week, and I'm just wondering about that, you know. And so versus, you know, Susan is lazy and she's, you know, disrespectful and, you know, doesn't follow instructions. I mean, those are conclusions versus sort of describing the behavior and sort of lay it out there and say, you know, this is what I'm seeing. Are you seeing the same thing? And how are you thinking about it? Is there something I need to know about that? So that there's an opportunity for dialogue about it, because lots of times in life situations, there's something else going on that we don't know about, and it makes more sense, the behavior does, when we understand that, oh, okay, they have a child who's, you know, got medical problems and they have to take them to, you know, a special daycare or something like that. So the I statement, and then just observations, and then just sort of stop, you know, and listen. And don't have a full speech written out ready to go and lambast the person, but just sort of take it a step at a time and dialogue about it.
So is there, I mean, it probably doesn't do any good to vent to our coworkers, you know, family and friends. That's, you know, one of the challenges, of course, of spouses, right? We come home from work and we sort of unload about our day. But is there a point when you do want to maybe share with the coworkers if it has to do with a, you know, boss or leader or something?
Well, I wouldn't talk to somebody else about another person until you've talked to them directly. I mean, we're encouraged that if we think somebody else has a problem with us, we're supposed to go and talk to them about it. If we have a problem with somebody, we're supposed to go and talk to them about it. So always that way. I think the point of venting can be helpful if the goal is then to say, okay, I'm really frustrated about this, and then do you think I'm thinking correctly about this? Am I missing something? Or you have ideas of what I should do. If it's just complaining and grumbling, which is more the biblical term for venting, and we know God doesn't really like those of us that do that, but to have an action, to say, okay, am I thinking clearly about this, you know, or am I sort of overreacting given my own personal history and who I am? Do you have any ideas of next steps? If there's a goal towards an action or getting corrected on how you think about it, I think it can be helpful.
You know, I think others, various, you know, leaders and speakers have talked about attitude. You know, if 90% of life is attitude, then
right.
So can we learn how to just respond or react in a different manner to maybe better handle these unpleasant or maybe even unhealthy situations?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know what? We have to, first of all, think correctly that life is going to be tough, that there are going to be problems, things aren't always going to work right. And so when the copier breaks down, or when you have a flat tire, or when somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to, welcome to life. You know, and part of it is you know, our culture is focused on happiness, but Scripture really talks about contentment. And, you know, I don't know that we're always supposed to be happy, but I think we can be content where we are. And part of that has to do with being thankful for, you know, other parts of our life. I mean, discontent is usually, and I would say almost always, a result of comparison, either comparison with others or comparison with our life previously or where we think it should be. And I often start my workshop off and say, hey, you know why it's a good day? How many of us woke up today? Some people didn't. We have running water. It's hot water. We have food to eat, and we didn't have to dodge bullets or mortars to get here. So we're better off than 3 billion people today. I mean, so we just, and it's like, yeah, we got emails, and yeah, there's traffic, but you know what? There are a lot worse things that people are having to cope with, and just remember, we're blessed.
I guess along with that, then we, you know, particularly as you said, oftentimes as Christians, we think, well, we need to be nice, so we just sort of let things slide and let things go and say, well, I just need to absorb this all, even though, you know, this person really is inconsiderate or it really is toxic. I mean, is there some sort of line that once it gets crossed to say, no, this is where we need to take a stand or do something?
Well, I think there's some different lines, and one would be, you know, is whatever's going on good for the organization, you know, as far as, you know, a person not fulfilling their responsibilities and I'm covering for them, or is this good for the other person? In other words, letting them continue down this path may not be the best thing for them. They need some honest feedback about how their behavior impacts others, and is it healthy for me? We talk about that there's really sort of three parts. This is in the training we do, that there's three parts of a toxic system, and one of those is dysfunctional colleagues. And dysfunctional colleagues are people that indirect communication, they don't tell the truth, and they blame, and they make excuses, and they expect you to fix their problem, and so forth. And at some point, that's just not healthy for them and the organization. And I think when you start to have that sense that, man, this is just not going the right direction, you've really got to make an assessment. And I always say one of the best things you can do if you're in a difficult situation is make sure you have a wise counselor that you can bounce thoughts off of and ideas. Somebody's not part of the system that you can say, hey, this is what's going on. Tell me what you think. What questions I need to be asking myself. How do I maybe need to think about responding?
That's one. We've got a couple minutes before the break. You want to just run by
so,
two and
so,
three?
Yeah. So the three main parts that we talk about are sick systems, meaning a system just, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, hospitals and universities and government systems, public schools are sort of notoriously sick systems in that there's too many rules and regulations. There's too many reporting relationships. The communication is poor. There's no accountability and responsibility. And so it opens itself up for miscommunication, people not doing what they're supposed to, and so you wait in line forever and never get served. So you have that part, just how things are structured. Secondly, toxic leaders, people that are really – and it's not an incompetent leader, but a toxic leader who's really destructive to the people around them. And then third is dysfunctional colleagues, people that just are not healthy and don't sort of – act like adults, you know, in the sense of that they accept that they make choices, they're responsible for it, they don't expect to get privileges when they haven't done what they're supposed to. And those three together can really make a nasty workplace. And then the last component is our response, because we can either make something a little bit worse or a little bit better, or at least sort of keep it neutral. And so we're a factor as well.
We'll talk more about all those factors and our response, particularly as we talk about rising above a toxic workplace, taking care of yourself in an unhealthy environment. Copies of the book to give away. I'd love to have you sign up for one. Join the conversation as well. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. Talking today to Dr. Paul White, psychologist, author, and speaker. Makes work relationships work. He's the co-author of this great resource called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. More ahead.
925 for service and devotion. You would think that I would deserve a fair promotion. Want to move ahead, but the boss won't seem to let me. I swear sometimes I'm burning out to get me.
That was kind of a toxic environment, as I recall that movie, 9 to 5. Wow. I don't know. Is that part of your training materials, Paul?
I use a video from that to bring people back from a break. So
okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're back from the break.
There we go.
And we're talking today with Paul White, psychologist, author, and speaker. We're talking about the book that he has co-written with Dr. Gary Chapman and Harold Myra called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, Taking Care of Yourself in an Unhealthy Environment. And it's a great resource. We've got some copies to give away. And if you'd like to join the conversation, or if you want to give us a call, or you can use email as well at myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's the email link right there. You can send your note in, or you can give us a call at 877 93 Faith. Angel called in from Sioux Falls and asked if you could elaborate on working in an environment as a business professional with unskilled laborers. And I guess it makes me wonder, Paul, are there sort of different work environments where the possibility of more of these unhealthy environments can naturally come up?
Yeah, that's I don't know about that as far as like the skilled labor. But what I will say is this, is that there's different kinds of unskilled labor or people who work that way. Some people are just that they're sort of at the beginning of their career. They're young people and they're, you know, they aren't trained yet. There's some people who are often immigrants and don't speak English as a first language. And so communication becomes a huge issue and making sure there's clear communication. And there's some people who sort of stay in the unskilled labor force because they have life problems. They can't sort of manage their life. They maybe have drug and alcohol problems, or they just can't sort of get to work regularly, or they don't manage finances. And one of the issues that we know is that for employers, what we really are looking for right now in workers is good character, because we can train most other skills. And you may or may not know, but when I talk to most managers and employers, they have a hard time finding good people. And so part of it may be, I guess, in this situation, make sure that you're communicating clearly and they understand what they're supposed to do. And secondly, related to that, make sure you train them effectively, and that means repeatedly. Most of us, especially if you're maybe a quick learner or whatever, somebody can tell you something you get the first time. For other people, they need a few times and sort of monitoring it in smaller steps. So sometimes it can be frustrating because people don't do what they're supposed to, but they forget what they're supposed to do in what order. And then lastly, sometimes it's just that they don't have the character qualities of dependability and a work ethic and being honest. And so depending on that situation, you may need to try to find a better source of employees, sometimes like from trade schools or Christian schools where young people are looking for work.
We probably can't overemphasize the need to have a clear communication, right, at all levels. I mean, that's sort of at the heart of so much of this, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, we were talking at breaking and mentioned about, you know, how quickly a workplace can become toxic. And I don't know about a big workplace, but a person's personal space and workplace can become toxic. And the sort of the core issue in most places is major problems in communication. It's either a lack of communication, that there's not communication between the employees and the supervisor, or from management to different departments, across departments, with suppliers or even customers. And if there's not communication, then, you know, good decisions and actions don't happen or don't follow. So a key part is for people to learn to try to really effectively communicate with the people that are directly related to.
One of our callers, I think yesterday, had asked about, you know, in a work environment where there seemed like there was hidden agendas, which maybe gets into sort of the boss's vision compared to, the line level vision.
Right. And that can be sort of that indirect message. And that's actually can be a part of sort of a toxic leader. Is toxic leaders are very goal oriented, but it's all about their goals and that they are going to advance. And they may use or sort of cover those with the organizational goals or whatever, but it's all about them. I mean, and just to say a word about toxic leaders, they're basically just about themselves. They're narcissistic. They think they're the best. They think rules don't apply to them. They're condescending to others. They're manipulative. And they take credit even when they didn't do the work. Blame others when there's a mistake. And so that whole communication part and hidden agendas, they often have a different goal than what it's supposed to look like on the surface.
So are toxic leaders born that way, or do they learn their bad behavior?
Well, it depends whether we're talking about you or not, Neil.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, that is sure. Yeah, I was taking notes just before there, and Ted and Chris are going, yes, one, two, three. Well, no, I did want to wonder, were these people bullies in their childhood, and they never grew out of it? So.
You know what? This is my belief, okay, that I think most toxic leaders are formed that way through childhood. that they're basically raised in an environment where it's all about them, that they're never really held accountable for mistakes or errors or poor choices, and they always get away with it. And so they learn that, and then they often are very – one of the interesting things about toxic leaders is they often look good initially. I mean, otherwise, how do they get where they are? I mean, they often can be skilled. They can be very verbal and socially skilled and engaging, but underneath that, they are there to take advantage of things and people for themselves. And I think they become distorted over time, and they can go one way or the other. But I don't think a person would – grow up as a healthy a young adult and then all of a sudden become a toxic leader. I think that'd be difficult.
You know, many environments don't allow I think particularly maybe Christian environments or those, you know, ministry environments, dissension is always kind of a hard thing. Well, you're just being, you know, difficult or obstinate, or, you know, we need everybody, you know, to be on the same page and, you know, and agree. And so this, how do we deal with kind of those areas of dissension? You know, to, I mean, it might be at great personal risk to actually go and have a conversation with a toxic leader.
Right. Well, absolutely. In fact, one of the suggestions I always have in dealing with a toxic leader is you first of all got to take care of yourself, because they will take you down to survive themselves. So if you really are dealing with a toxic person or a leader, you need to document. First of all, you need to do your job. You need to document it, and you need to be aware that, you know, they may try to blame you for things and so forth. I think that in the Christian environment and sort of the issue about, you know, dissension, that's part of what leads some Christian environments to become toxic is that there's not an open, honest dialogue about the facts. And that's really ultimately we have to get back to reality, both sort of from a worldview that, you know, people make mistakes and there's needs to be room for forgiveness, but there's also you know, that the money isn't coming in for the capital campaign. And, I mean, one of the situations we talk about is a church where the senior pastor basically told the rest of the staff, okay, you know, we're going to say that this money is for the capital campaign to make it look good, even though it wasn't. And, you know, obviously, and then there was threats about this is what we're going to, because we've got to look successful and keep the energy going. And, you know, I mean, it was lying, but they were, you know, threatened to not tell the truth.
Yeah, I know one of the illustrations, too, was I think in a Christian leader said, well, you know, as I look around, said, clearly I'm not the problem.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing that I always confront people about. When we talk about dysfunctional individuals, it's never us, is it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and yet we know we all are dysfunctional to some degree. We all make mistakes. We don't see things clearly as God does. And it's easy to focus on other people. And so I think one of the healthy responses is, you know, as you think about and look at these characteristics, it's, okay, which of these do I sort of have a tendency to lean towards? Do I not always tell the truth so that people don't get mad or upset or they think well about me? Or do I, you know, mainly think about myself and don't consider how this might affect other people and so forth?
Yeah, fortunately, I've been able to just sort of, you know, carry on this interview with a dispassionate, you know, detachment, because, of course, none of this is about me. So anyway,
exactly.
Paul White is my guest today. Paul White is an author and a counselor and speaker, and he works with companies and organizations all around the world on making relationships work. And we're talking about rising above a toxic workplace. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question or comment, you'd like to join the conversation, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Paul, if we are a boss or a supervisor, are there some key do's and don'ts that we could practice to maybe if an environment is, we see some problems in the environment, or we want to make sure that we keep it as a healthy environment?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, if we think about communication and problems in communication leading to an unhealthy workplace, then facilitating communication is a good antidote. And so that means and it's sort of like one of my friends said, you know, some dads think and or CEOs think, you know, communication is sit down and listen because I got important things to say to you. But it's really asking questions and listening to your team and your staff. And if you see flecks of things, especially if things that sort of don't make sense. It's like, well, that's sort of unusual. I would invite leaders to go and talk and ask people and say, you know, just notice this. I'm just trying to figure out, and how are things going? Tell me what's up, and I just want to make sure things are going well. And so that there's a feedback loop, and to truly listen. I think the other part is, I mean, you know, good leaders are learners, and they're humble. Even in the secular world, research shows that really the top leaders, with exception of, you know, a couple of the top, you know, Steve Jobs and those kind of things that are really sort of an anomaly, but most good leaders learn from others, and they're humble. They know that they're there to serve their people and their customers and their clientele, and that they're a steward, and they're in a position of responsibility, and it's not about them. It's about the team and helping other people function well.
Talking about rising above a toxic workplace, taking care of yourself in an unhealthy environment. In just a moment, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Paul White and address the five languages of appreciation in the workplace, something that Paul and Dr. Gary Chapman have co-written as well, and we'll learn some good application from that as well about how we can be a light as followers of Christ in the workplace and what kind of difference we can make if we just show a little appreciation. We'll get to that and more. If you have a question or comment, you can join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Dr. Paul White, licensed psychologist, has worked with individuals, businesses, and families in a variety of settings, teaching and training and consulting. He's written several books, including the one we're referencing today, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, and there's more to come. Talking about rising above a toxic workplace, taking care of yourself in an unhealthy environment. And, you know, there's going to be times where the environment's not so good. And maybe you're in a situation right now where you need some help and some encouragement. We've got that today in our conversation with Dr. Paul White, who's a psychologist, a number of years of experience working in a variety of settings, and consults and speaks to a wide variety of organizations and businesses, making work relationships work. He's an author, co-authored this book called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, with Dr. Gary Chapman, and Harold Meyer has written a couple others as well, including the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. And Paul, I'm wondering, I guess, can a Christian have a positive impact, or maybe possibly change a toxic workplace? And maybe the other side of that is there a warning sign or a trigger when it's time to leave and say, you know, I can't stay here?
Right. Absolutely, we can make a difference. And one of the cool things that we've learned with the five languages of appreciation is that you don't have to be at the top to make a difference. I mean, when we first started out working with organizations, we really were focusing on managers and executives and so forth. But what we found over time is that anybody can make a difference in their work environment. And we've had organizations where we sort of started with either, you know, a receptionist or just a supervisor of a small department, and taking them through our appreciation at work training, and where they learn how to apply the five languages at work, and it sort of goes viral from there. And we've, you know, turned around significantly large national organizations. And, you know, I think the concept that people need to know and remember, and by the way, all this stuff is, if you go to appreciationatwork.com, that's sort of our hub website, you can get to all of this because we have an inventory and training aspects, but is that people feel appreciated in different ways, just like in five love languages. Not everybody feels loved in the same way, and you need to speak the language that's important to the recipient, and that's sort of the key word in the workplace. It's not what's important to you, what makes you feel good, but that for some people, words don't get it. You know, I had one person say, every time when he grew up, if somebody complimented him, the next thing that was coming was an ask. And so he sort of built this defense system that if somebody ever said something positive, he always, you know, defensively wondered, okay, what do you want from me? And whereas time was important to him, and he happened to be a coach, and if you went and hung out with him out of practice, man, he lit up and he'd tell you about the kids and their lives and what's going on. And so it's true at work that some people like words, some people don't. There's different kinds of words as far as like going up in front of a group versus personal, acts of service, tangible gifts, and we even talk about physical touch, which is largely spontaneous celebration at the workplace. So it's a high five when you finish a project or a congratulatory handshake if you make a sale, a fist bump, pat on the back, that kind of stuff. And so communicating in the way that's important to the people around you is really important, especially for leaders. And we talk about the developing leaders that you need to learn how to lead people who are different than yourself. Otherwise, you have a bunch of little mini-yous walking around, and you may be good, but you need people with different skill sets and personalities, and they are encouraged and feel appreciated in different ways than you do.
A practical insight, the five love languages, they work in relationships and marriage. They work at work as well. Again, you can find out more on the website, appreciationatwork.com, and the word at is spelled out, appreciationatwork.com. Is there some warning signs or triggers when it may be time to leave? And you say, you know, I just, this would really be the best,
Well, you know, I'll answer that, but also say if people want to write us at admin@appreciationwork.com, we've got a pamphlet that we wrote after the book, and it's how to know when it's time to quit your job. And if people just write us at admin@appreciationwork.com, we'll send them that. But I would say one of the biggest warning signs is that you are not doing well as a person. Okay, think about, again, that physical poisonous environment. If you're breathing in toxins, or if you've got nasty stuff on your skin, or there's sharp things around that can cut you and you're getting hurt, it's not good. And so we have those signs for ourselves, whether we're getting increasingly anxious and irritable, we're not sleeping well because we're so disturbed, we're not relating well to people, and in fact we're working so much that we don't have friendships and supportive relationships, or our friends and family say, you know, what's up with you? You really seem not yourself. And then physical problems, whether that's heart issues or, you know, just chronic illness kinds of things. And so you got to pay attention to how you're doing it, and then look and say, okay, is the stress at work really creating this? And I would say along with that, it's, you know, that you just absolutely dread going to work because you got to figure out how you're going to get through the day without getting beat up in some way, you know, whether it's verbally or feeling, you know, blamed for stuff.
Are we kind of getting to the point where maybe religious beliefs are becoming more of a toxin in the workplace? And are there some recommendations for how we live out our faith?
Well, yeah, I think it is becoming more and more difficult to talk about our relationship with God and Christ in the workplace in some ways. But interestingly, the thing we do is we're kind to other people. People were drawn to Christ and to the church because of their love for one another and their kindness. And I think as we're kind, as we serve other people, then they are willing to open up to us about their hurts, and then we can share really the truth about life in Christ. And so it starts with actions, and we try to serve people and be kind to them, respond to them as we would want to be responded to, and we can win them over with sort of that sweetness of the breath of Christ in our life.
You know, maybe just say a little more about the principles of Jesus applied at the workplace. I mean, the kindness clearly was one, but are there others that we maybe have overlooked or should apply when dealing with these kind of unhealthy situations?
Well, I think just generally speaking, I talk to young people that work is providing goods or services that people want or need and are willing to pay for. And so work is essentially meeting other people's needs. That's whether it's either the customers or your clientele or your employer has a need and they've hired you. And so it's about serving. And it's having that attitude rather than an entitlement attitude of, well, I should get this or they should do this for me. It's more about serving. And I think along with that, perseverance and patience, that lots of times we expect rewards or I don't know, promotions or anything to happen quickly. And if you talk to most people, most of us aren't rising stars. You know, it's you just sort of put one foot after the other and keep doing the right thing, and then God honors that over time.
One of the chapters you address is cynicism, and it's kind of easy to fall into that if there's been a...
Oh, it's not either, Neil. It's not.
I'm just, you know, theoretically speaking, I wouldn't know about it myself. But
yeah.
But, you know, if there has been some changes, we've been... leadership is, you know, you're not, the environment's not healthy, so we're going to try and do this. We're changing. We're going to use, five languages of appreciation.
Right.
How do we, maintain our openness, our hopefulness, as opposed to cynicism?
Well, the issue about sarcasm and cynicism, actually, one of the things that we...
Which are my spiritual gifts, I think, by the way.
By the way, sarcasm isn't one of the languages of appreciation.
Oh,
but,
okay.
People, there's a lot of employee recognition programs out there. And basically, we just want to make sure people understand that appreciation, authentic appreciation, is different than sort of going through the motions recognition that happens. Because what happens is it feels very disingenuous to people, and they question the motives, and it feels, impersonal. And then it undermines trust. And then ultimately, cynicism, has a sense of anger and sort of wanting to get back at. And I think if we are genuine in our expression of appreciation over time and in a way that's meaningful to the person, it can be highly impactful. And I would say, if I'm going to give two points for somebody to try to start changing a negative workplace around or keep it from going there, one is focus on communicating positive things to other people, whether that's, wow, it's a great day, it's a little bit warm, but man, I'm thankful I got air conditioning, aren't you? And be positive about life, about other people, and then don't engage in the negative. There's a lot of, little negative sniping that goes on and gossiping. And if you're there, just excuse yourself. You don't have to say anything about it. Just say, I'll catch you guys later. And don't facilitate or, help that grow. And over time, and especially if you can then engage somebody else, another coworker, to say, hey, let's try to be a little more positive together on this, then you can start to make a difference.
Got only about 90 seconds left, but Brenda had sent in a question about toxic workplaces, about a particular church that's had a high turnover of personnel because of lack of accountability. Is high turnover kind of a warning sign or a red flag?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Especially in a department, a singular department around a leader. Toxic leaders, and actually we have what we call toxic achievers, people who are really good at what they do, but they kill everybody else around them while they're doing it, and so people leave. And high turnover is clearly one of the results both of a toxic environment and also people not feeling valued and appreciated. Most people don't leave work for more money. They leave to another job. They leave because they don't feel valued and appreciated. And we can help keep volunteers in ministries longer when we teach the staff how to communicate appreciation the way that's important to the people that are helping them out.
Now, you want to find out maybe some ways that you can begin to show and express appreciation at work? You can go to the website appreciationatwork.com, and that's where you'll find a number of resources that Dr. Paul White and Dr. Gary Chapman, Harold Myra have put together. They've co-authored the book Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, Taking Care of Yourself in an Unhealthy Environment. And Dr. White has served as a counselor and a trainer, a speaker for a number of years, working with companies and organizations in a variety of ways. And honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith, and wish you a good day at work next time you're working, Paul.
All right, I will. Well, I'll be doing that in a few minutes.
Really?
Here,
okay,
so
good.
You.
It was just it wasn't the boss asking me to check up on you. No, there was none of that going on.
There we go.
Paul White, joining us today. If you missed part of the program today, you can always catch it online. We post our interviews on the website, so you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you'll find the archive of this and other programs there. And you can always pass it on to a friend. We'd love to have you do that. And invite you to join us again next time on Connecting Faith.
Okay.